Welcome, everybody, to this week's inaugural episode of Breaking Free of PsyOps. And the reason why I'm doing this is because for people who have been frequenting this time slot over the past several months of Monday nights, they'll have noticed that the theme has been movie nights. It's been fun. You know, we show a movie, talk often with the film producer of the movie. A lot of them have been from our production studio. My wife Cynthia and I have launched a production studio a few years ago, and so we were running a lot of those as conversation starters. And we invited on a lot of guests as well who made some great documentaries to chat with them and you know, again, uplift the general culture. The thing is, I kind of was running a little bit low. I was running low on new movies. So I was thinking to myself, how best to use this time but to shed light on PsyOps. We have no shortage, after all, of PsyOp-y narratives that are designed to deflect, to weaponize us, to restructure our thinking around false narratives. And so, you know, we're going to start this first inaugural episode with a wild ride. It's going to be something that will deal with the role of a figure that most of you might have heard of before by the name of Aleister Crowley. Now, Aleister Crowley is somebody who's often portrayed in our culture as a bit of a quack, an anomaly, a Satanist at the fringes of society, not really having a direct impact, being something that maybe Ozzy Osbourne had a fetish for, you know. But in fact, without an appreciation of both the man, what he did, what he was brought into, and also the institutions and ways of thinking that he inaugurated in the course of his bizarre, disturbing, disgusting life, it would be impossible to properly appreciate what are the dynamics shaping the contours of the world that we're living in. And I would say there's very little, unfortunately, that was not deeply impacted shaping our current civilization that is currently sitting on a major crisis that has multiple dimensions: cultural, economic, military, more. So we're going to look at this from a variety of dimensions. I was asked to actually present this. The reason why I'm doing this particular thing is the inaugural show. I originally was planning, just so you all know, to debunk different aspects of the anti-China PSYOP, which has so many different dimensions to it. So I was planning originally to do this with a China focus originally, but something else happened. Basically yesterday I was invited to speak at an eschatology conference in Europe. I wasn't in Europe. It was over Zoom, and I presented this topic. I was asked to present on the devil in Crowley's Thelema. We're going to say a little bit more about that. I didn't get a chance to properly go through all of the slides, all of the ideas, because the time limit was quite short. But I did present some slides, and I have a lot more here that I'm going to show in a more full exposition today here with all of you. And hopefully by the time this thing is over, we'll have time to field some questions from the audience. And again, I won't be able to see the comment section while I'm going through the formal part of today's presentation. So I apologize if I just miss things, as I often do, but I will try my best once the presentation is over to look through the comments and see if there's anything that strikes the eye that I'll bring up and address if there are questions. So always have them in the back of your mind. This is ideally interactive, participatory, and I want you all to feel like you're in a room here with me. Okay, so before we do any of that, like usual, we are going to play a little ad from Conscious Strength. Ma yourself with supplements that don't suck from Conscious Strength. Founded by Badland's own Jordan Sather in 2019, Conscious Strength products are made in America and won't break your bank, unlike other online brands. Their lineup includes collagen for strengthening joint and hair, electrolytes to get rid of those cramps, green powders that taste good and mix easy, Shilajit gummies, methylene blue, zeolite, and more. Flip the finger to pharma, be your own doctor, and get supplements that you can trust from Conscious Strength. Go to badlandsmedia.tv/strength to shop now. One more time, badlandsmedia.tv/strength. The link will be in the description box below. So, and let's do one more while we're at it. We're on a bit of a roll here. So there's a word from Rattlesnake Meats coming up here. You've been sold a lie that food should be cheap, that grocery store chicken and beef are fine. They are not. At Rattlesnake, they raise protein the right way. Pasture-raised, 21-day aged beef at premium pasture-raised chicken with no subsidies, no shortcuts. It's not cheap to produce. It shouldn't be cheap to eat. Bite back. Think differently about your protein. Visit rattlesnakemeats.com/badlands, promo code badlands, and get an order sent Monday or Tuesday. Ships to all of the lower 48 states, shipping included. All right. So, okay. Now, without further ado, we are going to get into the disturbing mind and world of Aleister Crowley, and we'll see where this leads us. All right. So here is a PowerPoint, and at this point, I will no longer be able to see the comment section. And again, I do apologize. So what is thelema? Thelema, I don't know how to pronounce that. And what role does the idea of the devil play, whether real or a concept of it? Point being is this thing is a toxic witch's brew. But it sounds attractive on the surface for many people who are a little bit soft-minded and don't realize what this is. And essentially, the whole of thelema can be rounded out in Crowley's term, in Crowley's own words, as "do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." And then he adds to that, saying, "love is the law, love under will." Okay, so that's pretty broad, a broad statement. What does that mean? How do you define love? How do you define will? Who is it who gets to benefit from being those who have the right to happiness, who utilize their will? Who are these people? Is it everybody? If everybody does what they wilt, which is the whole of the law, that everybody gets to do what they want, how do you get anything done in society? Is it anarchy and some idea that just things will organize if everybody individually does whatever they want? How do we know that everybody wants what is good? Maybe some people want what is terrible. What if some people want to enslave others? What if they want to sell drugs? Should they be allowed? If that's what they want to do, then this law says you should. Of course, this is also part of the Western perverse libertarian, the Austrian school model of defining human beings around the idea that everybody should be free to do what they want. And they'll add, though, the little disclaimer to, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else. But what does that even mean, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody else? And as this disclaimer says, love is the law, love under will. Okay, so anybody should be engaged with doing what they want as long as it's for love. But again, how do you define love? These are all things that Crowley has very dark ideas of, and we're going to look at some of them. First up, Crowley's influence, as I said, it's very big. Just a few examples of the culture, things like, you know, almost modern secular deities of the pantheon of modern society that shaped so much of the aesthetics, the worldview, even the philosophy of those who lived through the 1960s, the Beatles, are not removed from having some influence under Aleister Crowley's lead. The Beatles, after all, who won the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band album, featured Crowley there in the back staring at you creepily, but also in the first song featured an homage saying 20 years ago today, which was a direct homage to the 20-year anniversary of the death of Aleister Crowley that this song was composed for, and this whole album served as an implicit manifesto towards. Jim Morrison. We've spoken a lot about Jim Morrison on this program, or on programs with Gordon on Breaking History. Him featured there with a bust of Crowley's head wrapped in a serpent with other members of the Doors, the Doors being the name for Aldous Huxley's Doors of Perception, as a psychedelic manifesto, a gospel of drugs for the new age, which people like Aldous and others were seeking to bring about. The Doors, I mean, Jim Morrison, who's often sold as a great philosopher, stated, "I am interested in anything about revolt, disorder, chaos, especially activity that appears to have no meaning, which was one of his core motives of how he composed his philosophy, his music. That was what he explicitly stated was a core intention, and that has been also a core intention of Crowley within his writings. Is anything which alchemically, spiritually, and mentally transforms a society from the shackles of conscience, of tradition, of family values, of things that are holding us back from doing what we wilt, then those should be destroyed. And everything, whether it's the, you know, a Crowleyite's idea of music, of science, of art, whatever, should accelerate that idea of chaos. Dr. Dre, everybody knows, Do What Thou Wilt, famously one of his famous sweaters. And here he is with one of his mentors, Marina Abramovic, a famous witch and Satanist, doing some weird art piece in public. Kanye, let's presume whether or not he is today or not. The fact was he and Dre worked very closely together on occultism. And going back, this is already 10 years ago, in his video Power, we could feature clear satanic Crowleyite symbolism where the self-deification of the individual overrides any belief in an external god beyond that. And there you have two scantily clad demon women with horns addressing or flanking the godman himself. Let's presume that he's no longer on this path, but I don't know that. Of course, the Rolling Stones, vastly, vastly occulty, very much tied to the Crowley Satanist Network, even had been collaborating with Crowley's disciple Kenneth Anger in making certain movies like Lucifer Rising, which also involved various members of the Manson family. And what you have right there is an album cover featuring also Saturn in the background, a red Saturn, implying as well the Kronos, the god, the cannibalistic god of wasting time that eats his children. That's how Saturn and Kronos are portrayed. And that plays a big role in Crowley's theology. The role of Bowie, David Bowie, also for a period at least a self-professed fascist, not neo-Nazi in England, as well as a Crowleyite. I don't know if he ever changed his ways. And there's many others. Now, who is Crowley first? Before we go into Thelema and go into the institutions he created and how, let's just quickly take a step back and say, who is this creature? Now, he had a bit of a chameleon-like character, as I think many people know. Crowley, I'm just moving something here. Crowley looked like a normal young kid at the age of 11 or 12 up there in the upper left, but he had various other personas and images that he would brand himself into, from an Orientalist Arabesque creature moving around Arab realms in the circles of Alaf Ghani, the founder of Salafism and the Muslim Brotherhood Network that would produce Albana and others who had communications and even possibly rituals. I've seen a lot of information pointing to the fact that Crowley and Albana actually had carried out workings together. That is the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, to his role as a Freemason, the head of the a variety of orders that we're going to look at that are not, don't, that also include the Rite of Memphis Misraim, an Egyptian rite that had merged together in 1890 under Garibaldi, a minion of the figure of Giuseppe Mazzini, one of the key architects of global color revolutions in the 1840s, 50s, 60s, Mazzini being a grandmaster Freemason himself, and again, an innovator of the idea of creating movements that would weaponize a mass base, especially young people, who could then be channeled to overthrow governments that were problematic for the ruling oligarchy that he was always devoted to throughout his life living in England after his work overseeing the purge of Rome came undone in around 1848. And that Mazzini was a leader who used Garibaldi to do a number of things, overthrowing governments in Latin America as well as across Europe, and who oversaw this fusing of the Memphis Misraim order, an initiatory degree system that was infused into conventional Freemasonry. Again, we're going to see a few more things. He went by a few names here. He lived from 1875 to 1947. The names Master Therion, Baphomet was a name he created for when he took control of the OTO, Ordo Templi Orientis Lodge. His mother himself had named him the Great Beast 666. His original name as a child was Edward Alexander Crowley. He was born to a very wealthy family in a strict Plymouth Brethren sect in Warwickshire, England, called the Plymouth. So the Plymouth Brethren, and it's specifically the exclusive Plymouth Brethren was the name of the sect he was born into, a highly, highly abusive, stringent ascetic sect. Although his father made a fortune as a brewer producing alcohol, which shows you the hypocrisy of how this game is played. He entered in 1895 Trinity College after his father died and his mother was going crazy, as she named him the 666 Beast, because he was taking clear pleasure in murdering animals and doing other sadistic acts. She ended up giving him over to his uncle and his aunt, who were both members of something known as the Primrose League. Now, the Primrose League was headed up. It was an Anglican-run Jacobite. And I say Jacobite, that's the followers of those who believe that the Stuarts should be restored to the monarchy, of Tories that were under the control of Sir Glascoigne Cecil, the Earl of Salisbury. Now, in the 1890s, when Crowley begins to move in these circles as a teenager, about to enter into Cambridge, Glascoigne Cecil sees his talents. He's become a mathematician, a poet, a chess player, a mountain climber, under the mentorship of his strange uncle and aunt, who certainly open up high corridors of influence within him. And Glascoigne Cecil ensures that this young talent will be given access to Cambridge University, Trinity College specifically. Glascoigne Cecil, by the way, becomes prime minister on several occasions, both during the Civil War in the 1880s as well as 1890s. A very powerful figure of the Cecil family, a high-level nobility, a high-level powerful family in England, who ensures that he has a very accelerated upward mobility. Around the same time, he's recruited to British intelligence. We're going to say some more about that in around 1897. He's sent to various places in the world, like Russia, to engage with the occult networks of Russia, who were then planning a coup, an overthrow of the Russian system, in order to foment basically complete anarchy. He's also initiated into the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, which is specifically the Isis Urania Temple in London. Now, the screen will not share, unfortunately, so I'm sort of stuck at the moment. Ah, there it is. Oh, that's a very slow share. Okay, let's hopefully keep the pace going. What is this Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn? It had been founded in 1887 in England. All of the leading members were also members of Madame Helena Blavatsky's esoteric section of Theosophy that was set up in 1888. Theosophy itself was sort of the spiritual warfare bureau set up by the British Empire under the leadership of Colonel Olcott Blavatsky. A.P. Sinnett and others were all members. It was a very powerful movement that was designed to literally create a new synthetic world religion that would take the most esoteric, occult, superstitious elements of black magic extracted from every faith and religion and movement of the world and infuse it into a new stew, a melting pot, that could then be more controlled by a high priest. The devotion of Madame Blavatsky was to unveil the age of Isis, the sacred feminine that would replace the age of Pisces, the age of reason, of Socrates, of Jesus. And that age had to come to an end in the minds of the leaders of the theosophical movement. Now, again, the theosophy movement always had an esoteric inner teaching that was different from the outward teaching structure of light and life and happiness that was reserved for an inner initiated elite. But that took on a more visceral form with the esoteric section that had amongst its founding members Westcott, William Wynne Westcott, somebody who would later groom Crowley in 1888. It was also tied to the ritual Jack the Ripper murders as well, very, very closely, which I wrote a whole several chapters in a my recent book on Revenge of the Mystery Cults for anybody who wants to know about the Jack the Ripper murders and this whole esoteric section. And part of the idea was to usher in the dawn of a new golden age. That's where the name Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, there you see the image by Israel Regardi of one of their official biographies featuring the sun rising, the red sun rising over what looks to be a Star of David of a triangle pointed upwards and downwards that have a number of meanings of the conjunction of opposites, the male and the feminine, the good and the evil, a variety of different interpretations of these symbols exist and are all equally true, but under a hierarchical thing. That's the first headquarters of the Isis Urania temple that Crowley was initiated into. Up there is a mock temple of what they generally aspire to build on the inside. And on the bottom right is the official seal of the Isis of the Golden Dawn, featuring all of its core symbols. A lot of it involves John Dee's demonology, angelology research that they infused into their magical workings. And so a lot of the symbols you'll find have their at least high influence from the alchemists around John Dee and Kabbalists around that network. More to be said, obviously, but let's just move on. Now, I mentioned already the Plymouth Brethren was this stringent sect that Crowley was born into. What did Crowley say about it? He said in his confessions later on in life that I accepted the theology of the Plymouth Brethren. In fact, I could hardly conceive of the existence of people who might doubt it. I just simply went over to Satan's side. Okay, so what is this Plymouth Brethren thing? The Plymouth Brethren were, or the exclusive Plymouth Brethren, which is a subsect within it, within this organization, was created by John Nelson Darby, who lived from 1800 to 1882. That's a picture of the creepy guy on the right. Anthony Norris was the official founder in 1830 or so of the Plymouth Brethren, who was a very close ally of Darby. And this organization had several innovations on how to interpret scripture. One of those things is that they asserted, following certain precedents that I'll say something about, that God, we had to assume, had a changing relationship to humanity defined by specifically millennialist dispensations. So every thousand years or so, God's way that he arranges his expectations, his desires, what is normal and good for humanity changes in specifically 1,000-year cycles, very numerological. This is an innovation I mentioned that had precedence. One of the key ones that Darby and the Plymouth Brethren directly take this from is the Jesuit Francesco Rivera, an eschatologist who oversaw the Council of Trent centuries earlier. That was sort of the Jesuit-run counter-reformation to prepare the groundwork for centuries and centuries of Christian versus Christian bloodbath across Europe in response to Martin Luther and the Protestant revolt. Rivera himself was merely adding to an already existent eschatology set forth by a very influential figure who was the advisor of many popes named Joaquin of Fiore of the 13th century, who was a Cistercian eschatologist and was also a follower of the Sabellian traditions. As well as Bernard de Clairvaux, Clairvaux being another eschatologist who promoted the idea that in the case of the Crusades, he was a Cistercian as well, who co-founded the Knights Templar as a Gnostic order to oversee the bloodbath of the Crusades. And he said that this was the culmination of prophecy and that the end of the world, the New Age, was upon us in the 11th century. And that was part of the idea of getting everybody in the world to just massacre themselves in a complete bloodletting, a purgative violence, as you could call it, which was, again, 1,000 years ago. The Sibyllian traditions, a whole class could be done on this. Specifically, the Sibylline oracles is something which heavily influenced all of these so-called Christian religious engineers, which are rooted in something very pre-Christian and which has been used by high priesthoods to create synthetic cults that could be then used and weaponized by a high ruling oligarchy to get humans to get rid of their free will and become instruments of their own doom, to put it shortly. Basically, it's very much rooted on prophetic utterings of oracles who would speak definitively about their insights into the end times. And with those things, which were treated almost as co-equal to the Gospels in the first millennium of Christianity, people would, if they believe that these apocalyptic nightmare scenarios are the will and inevitable of the Creator, then they would have no problems either doing nothing as society would get worse, would move in that direction, or would at worst even become instruments advancing apocalyptic scenarios unnaturally, as I believe people like Dick Cheney, or especially George Bush, saw himself as being an instrument to advance the Battle of Gog and Magog that he spoke about openly as what he understood to be the war on terrorism and the bombing of the Middle East. Another aspect of Darby's concepts, which influenced Crowley, and which he said he was always devoted to until his dying days, is that he says these millennial dispensations are defined around specific seven cycles. So there will be seven dispensations as a whole. The first age, the first thousand-year cycle, would be the Garden of Eden, the Age of Innocence. The second one to come after would be the Age of Conscience, which is Adam to Noah. The third is the Age of Government, of Noah to Abraham. And the fourth is the Age of Patriarchy, of Abraham to Moses. The fifth is the Age of Mosaic Law, of Moses to Jesus. And the sixth is the Age of Grace, which is Jesus to present. Now, how exactly that fits into something that, if he's a millennialist, how something 2,000 years earlier was part of this formula is beyond me, but that's at least the formula. And the Age of Seven is what Darby said we are now coming into, the post-Jesus age, or the age that would involve the restoration, I guess you could say. In Darby's world, it was the restoration of Jesus who would come again. But it had to be, in Darby's mind, punctuated by a seven-year tribulation. This is I think most people have encountered this who are listening. This didn't really exist in a popular way before Darby innovated it. And that this assumption that that the Antichrist had to emerge and had to spill the world's blood in a mass killing spree across all the world in order to inaugurate the blessed time of Jesus's return. That was Darby. Darby even added additionally that those who had made Jesus their personal Lord and Savior, not every Christian, of course, because a lot of Christians thought what he was saying was wrong and just immoral, but for those who were, I guess, acceptable, they would be scooped up, vaporized and brought into a secret rapture and would not have to experience those 7 years of hell on earth. So this is the thousand-year reign of Crowley's idea of the Age of Horus. And Crowley basically said, keep in mind, I just simply went over to Satan's side. So he was like, okay, if we're going to do this, let's make sure that the Antichrist comes. And he starts coming up with solutions on how to make that happen. Before we go into what those are, I just want to bring up a brief quote from a close collaborator of the Plymouth Brethren, or a leader of the Plymouth Brethren, and a close collaborator of Darby, whose influence is also very strong in our world, and some people might know of his name. I'm sure many do not. And his name was George Pember. And in the book, he was commissioned to write a series of books as guides or blueprints on how to navigate the 20th century and bring about the Antichrist. Now, one of his books is called The Antichrist, Babylon, and the Coming of the Kingdom. And he writes, "The wonder is that the restoration of Babylon has never been attempted. As soon, however, as Christendom is united in the form of the 10 confederate kingdoms, all jealousy will be at an end, and the great prize may then be seized for the common good." Sounds okay so far. Common good. Okay, sure. "No doubt commerce will be the exciting motive. The civilized world will perhaps combine to build a great central emporium which, by their united exertions, will quickly surpass all other cities." Sounds pretty good so far. "And finally become the capital of the Antichrist." Like, what the hell? Everything was okay up until that last little bit, because all of this that he wants to build with this great central emporium of commerce and cooperation, all this stuff, is needed to become the capital of the Antichrist. Like, really? Okay, so, again, his books are very important, very influential, very sophisticated, and very, very knowledgeable of the nature of the occult, because he is part of it. I'm quite convinced, having read enough of him now, that he himself acts like he is an opponent to much of this stuff, but he is clearly speaking as an initiate and a fake opposition. Some of the other Plymouth Brethren who go on to play a very, very vicious role, I would say even advancing and moving us towards this new Babylon that these social engineers believe needs to be recreated, include the figure of Ord Wingate. He was a leader and founder, a co-founder of the Haganah, which is the Night Brigades, the terrorist organization that later becomes the IDL. He works closely with Jabotinsky, leading self-professed fascist of Israel, and also Colonel Michael Sykes, who is his official biographer and the guy who worked in 1917 and 16 with Colonel Pico to create the Sykes-Picot Agreement that set the stage under British Mandate Palestine for the creation of the State of Israel. And at the right, what you find are two of Wingate's cousins, British intelligence orientalists T.E. Lawrence, the handler of the Hashemites, as well as E.G. Brown, a patron of Jamal al-Din al-Afghani, both British high-level Cambridge orientalists, al-Afghani being the founder of Salafism, the philosophy that promoted a radical literalist interpretation of Quran, and that has been the philosophical foundation stone of the generation of Islamist terrorism over the next 130, 40 years since it was innovated by al-Afghani. Al-Afghani being himself an occultic mystic, somebody who worked rather closely with Madame Helena Blavatsky. I've seen good arguments to prove that, make the case that she likely saw him as one of her ascended masters, as did Saint-Yves d'Alvedre, the founder of Synarchism, and a figure within the Martinist Freemasonic order. So these are things that heavily influenced the rise of fascism in its French, Italian, German variations, as well as American variations in the 20th century. So these are guys who are handlers of the radical Islamic perversion, as well as you have the handlers of the radical Zionist perversion of Judaism, which are both operating together, and that shouldn't be ignored. This is the sort of milieu, the sort of people that came out of the milieu that generated Crowley. So getting back to Thelema, what is Thelema? It is essentially, and I wrote it here in bullet points, but it is a new ethical order channeled to Crowley in 1904 in Egypt, and specifically in the, I think it was the King's Chamber. Somehow he was given access to this when the British Empire was still controlling much of India, where he carried out certain sex magic rituals with what he called a scarlet woman, one of the disposable women whom he and other Satanists will abuse, and who have to become sort of, or expected to be, the, on the one hand, channelers of various demonic messaging, but also at different times if needed, the hosts of the Antichrist that all of these Satanists, and there's thousands who have been trying to do this, hope to implant in their Scarlet Woman. Now, the demon in question was known as Iowas, who channeled something called the Book of the Law through his Scarlet Woman, and it was transcribed. To what degree this is true, I'm just saying the official story. The purpose of it was effectively to replace all religions and unify new synthetic religions, including modified Abrahamic-rooted faiths, which maybe couldn't be erased, but could at the very least be revamped around something more controllable, which would dominate the new coming age of Aeon of Horus, the age of the thousand-year Reich of Horus, that Crowley saw himself as the new Messiah endowed to usher in. It involved a self-deification of the initiate, which would supersede all outdated concepts of God. So the self who goes through an initiation process of cleansing and purgation of their former self, who dies to be reborn, would then become cognizant that they themselves are God. Now, not everybody was expected to do this. It was known that only a small fraction of a fraction of humanity would have the strength of stomach, to go through that type of unnatural initiatory experience. However, those who did would be then godlike. Other people would not be. The belief in the fundamental hegemony of the personal will over reality was one of the key aspects, that those who did that process would have a will that would then shape reality, and that nothing else matters but will, very Nietzschean, the will to power, and that anybody who doesn't, their will is not really will. They are merely the Untermenschen, the Unterhumans, to be played with by the overhumans, the Übermenschen. You can see how these ideas very much influenced the Übermenschen concepts of Hitler as well. It wasn't just Nietzsche. The resolution of the one and the many, which is an ancient concept or a paradoxical set of coexistent ideas that are contained in all things, was resolved in a very unnatural way through these initiation rituals configured by the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and other occultists. They've been doing this for a long time. Crowley added his own flavor. That again, and when I say the paradoxical one in the many, what I mean is that other and sameness exist in all sentient beings. There's a sense that we are, we have existence ontologically, but that it implies that we are not everything, that there is otherness outside of us. We are not the cause of the purpose of all of reality. We are here to discover, to find love for others, love for ourselves, love for the creator, right? Love for the creator's creation, respect as a process, but that's not the same thing as what Crowley is saying, and that everything that is contemplatable can exist as both as a one, but also as parts, right? Very core fundamental idea, whether it's a pen that can be broken up into parts or infinite parts, if you imagine infinite divisibility, or ourselves, you know, or we can be broken up into, cut up into pieces. We're made up of molecules, cells. So there's many different ways of thinking about the parts that make us as a one, but there's that one that we are is still more than the sum of our parts, you know, and we test this out because anytime that somebody tries to discover the principle of life that shapes an animal, let's say a cat, and they, you know, if they're somebody who believes that the whole is the sum of the parts, they would believe that the animating principle of life in a cat that makes its atoms move and everything else are somehow accessible and can be weighed and measured and seen and tasted if need be. And would first thing that they would do in a laboratory is they would kill the cat in order to start dissecting it to find what is this life principle. The fact is that the cat that is alive, the cat that is dead, they might have a lot in common, but there's something missing that's more than the sum of the parts that make each one of us our unique identities. So anyway, that can be resolved, those things, in a healthy way or in an unnatural way. The purging together, if you recognize, for example, that everything is made by God. Okay, fine. Everything is made by God. Well, what about evil? What about lies? What about the genocide in Gaza? The happiness certain freaks take out of hurting children, killing and doing horrible, terrible things. Is that also God, or is that an affront to God? If one is an occultist, they would say, oh, well, if God is everything and everything includes evil, then God is also evil. And so one has to then find exercises to unify the profane and the sacred, where maybe acts of creation and destruction, death and sex might be increasingly fused together so that we could learn to take great joy in acts of destruction, of acts of murder, of acts of immorality. And then the question for those who go through that process, brainwash themselves adequately to be acceptant of this new idea, might think of themselves as the elite looking down upon the non-initiated. And they might even have the unfortunate circumstance of then gaining power and control over levers of culture that will allow them to create more and more such cases. Like, for example, who created horror movies, right? Modern slasher movies of the 70s and 80s. Who were the those who promoted that new brand of pleasure? Was this something that was just a supply met to a demand that organically emerged? I would say no. I would say when you actually look at the Kenneth Angers out there, again, a Crowleyite who worked with Mick Jagger and who was a pioneer in shaping this new aesthetic of slasher movies and horror and the normalization of death and demonology, or people like John Carpenter, who innovated Halloween as an initiate of these dark black magic rituals, or the followers of the Process Church of Final Judgment, who also played a disproportionately large role in shaping not just the disgusting movies or the emergence of even pornography, but even heavy metal as a new aesthetic in the 1970s, 80s. Who are these people doing this? What about gangland rap music of a violent nature? Who ushered that in? And here's where you can start seeing the influence of how a satanic, small initiated core, if given too much power over levers of culture, can do grave damage to many, many more people than one might imagine. Now, there's, as I mentioned, all of these orders tend to have both an esoteric, hidden, and exoteric public aspect to them. In the case of Thelema, it welcomes both the people who think of themselves as Thelemic, who consider themselves to be either atheists or are, in some cases, deists who believe in a god, but a god of evil. The atheists say, I don't believe in any god. I just believe in doing what I want to do. And it seems like they're, for the most part, oftentimes not initiated into the big joke. I mentioned that Iowas, I didn't say this, was an emissary of the figure, the deity of Horus. Horus, however, had a different name than the Egyptian famous story. In Crowley's Book of Law, he calls Horus Ra-Hur-Kuit, the son of Nuit and Hadit. Nuit, Isis, and Hadit, Osiris, are the famous mother-wife combo to Osiris, the father, that had different meanings as different dynasties of Egypt changed. The meanings of the mythologies associated with Isis and Osiris changed as well when certain dynasties were moving in a more moral orientation. The stories affiliated with what is Isis, what does she want, who is she, as a concept, as a story, were more infused, you'll find, with moral values, that she was a kind of like an Athena-like goddess of wisdom, that Osiris was kind of like a wise statesman god that loved his subjects, that loved humanity and wanted us to succeed, that Horus was also a light bringer in a good sense of the word that involved morality and becoming more obedient and more humble. In later periods of dynastic decadence and collapse, the myths changed accordingly to bring out more immoral attributes of these deities. Horus definitely, in Crowley's mind, as the fallen solar deity, a sub-creature of Ra, one of the core top solar deities of Egypt, played a very negative role, very much like a Lucifer analog, as a fallen solar deity. You know, another solar deity that Horus is an analog to would be Marduk, for example, in Babylon. So that was Horus in Babylon. Horus is the Egyptian equivalent. And there's others. Apollo is another one in Greece, the god Apollo. Mithra is yet another one. I'll just say that right now, too, who's always worshiping Helios. The Horus is Helios in Rome, receiving sacrifice by Mithra. When you see images of Mithra slashing a bull's, a taurus throat, looking across one shoulder to Apollo, Helios, Horus, and away from the other shoulder, which is pointed towards Venus, a night deity, a Dionysian, you know, goddess of sin, the flesh. And he was dubbed the age of the crowned and conquering child, was what Crowley called Horus. Now, Crowley says, this is an excerpt from a longer article, but there's a lot of elements here from Crowley's own writings, that the age of Horus, or the aeon of Horus, would be a time of unconstrained personal freedom in which a handful of supermen led by Crowley would perfect their wills and become gods. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law for the supermen. They will delight in wines and strange drugs, says Crowley, which shall not harm ye at all, as well as every kind of sexual excess. Meanwhile, the rest of humanity, the slaves, shall be made to serve the supermen. Compassion is the vice of all kings, Iowas told Crowley. stamp down the wretched and the weak. Unlike the age of Aquarius, which was presumed to be a harmonious and smooth age, the transition to the age of Horus must be inaugurated by total war of annihilation and destruction. Ironically, the messenger received by Corrali was lying when he said that those who delight in the strange wine and drugs as much as they want without limit will not be harmed at all. Now, Corrali himself was a vicious heroin addict, which in many ways wrecked so much of his life. So I don't know if he was getting good advice there. Now, Corrali says in Magic Theory and Practice, page 96, there is a magical operation of maximum importance, the initiation of a new aeon. When it becomes necessary to utter a word, the whole planet must be bathed in blood. Before man is ready to accept the law of Thelema, the great war must be fought. This bloody sacrifice is the critical point of the world ceremony of the proclamation of Horus, the crowned and conquering child, as Lord of the Aeon. I said it with an overly dramatic tone because I imagine that he's probably full of himself and feels like he's a Moses ushering in some sort of a new dispensation. All right, what are some of the rituals that he innovates and creates? I already mentioned a couple, but let's just add a few more. The Rites of Eleusis, which is well known as the world's first modern drug rave, bringing in a variety of psychedelic drugs, opium, and other things into a musical fest with several plays performed or written and performed by Crowley and some of his Scarlet Women and followers in 1910. The Eleusinian Mysteries was one of the initiatory mystery schools that was very influential in the ancient world that existed in an area of Eleusis in Greece, which involved a concoction of psychedelic brews, high priesthoods that would oversee the initiation of somebody usually into a cave that would give them the sense of dying a terrible death and then a rebirth, making them sort of a new person. That would be a precondition for them going on in life, you know, as a new asset of empire. He created the Gnostic Mass in 1912, modeled on a mixture of Catholic and Orthodox masses, at least in their surface appearance. He developed sex magic rites. I mentioned those things already. Part of the idea was to open up portals to hell during sex and birth the Antichrist. One of Crowley's followers was, it appears he was a direct follower and a Satanist who was a pedophile that I'll say some more about, named Polanski. The film director who featured this story in Rosemary's Baby. The Templar revival of Baphomet, as I said, he called himself Baphomet in the 10th degree of the OTO that he took charge of in 1913 under Theodore Royce, the head of the OTO. So he took control of the Anglo-American branches of this new order, created several new things, which he called the guardian of the key of the temple. That was the androgynous deity featured on the right, featuring Solve et Coagula. The greater and lesser key of Solomon for his Solomonic magic innovations were something Crowley also added to. He had several Thelemic orders that he created, number one being the Argentum Astrum Lodge, also known as the Order of the Star of the East. In 1907, the Mysterium Mysticum Maximum, which was the Anglo branches of the Ordo Templi Orientis that he created in 1912, or took control of and then modified. The Universal Brotherhood of the Mahakakra is the Universal Circle, also founded in 1907, which had a leader named Charles Stansfield Jones, who Crowley called his magical child. He believed that he was the effective one of Crowley's Babylon workings, and that awoke in his soul during a time of some weird sex magic, a demon identity in Stansfield, who became kind of this enlightened prophet, as the story goes, and oversaw the creation of the Vancouver Lodge of OTO, the Agopic Lodge number one. Later on, certain people became leaders of the Agopic Lodge number two in California, L. Ron Hubbard and Parsons of Jack Parsons' lab at NASA would be two of those leading figures. Stansfield Jones became known as Father Akkad, and many of his followers became strangely Catholic in the 1920s and 30s and infested as part of an operation in the Catholic Church in a variety of its aspects, both Orthodox and Western, during that period. Again, Crowley's Demolay Cross is interesting here. That's the design he made for it. It's a take on the Templar cross of the Kingdom of Jerusalem that many have probably seen if you've seen the movies by Ridley Scott, another Gnostic high initiate. You know, the Kingdom of Jerusalem that the Templars and these Gnostic high priests took charge of for well over 250 years during the Crusades had that banner. As he calls it, the Baphomet degree, and de Molay being the final Grand Master of the Templars who was burnt at the stake when that order was taken down through a valiant fight, which is going to be the source of my next book, actually, or it's going to be featured in the next book, is how the Templars, who were the people who battled against the Templars and successfully took them down. That's a whole thing. That's a basic image of the massive, the largest extent of the borders of the Kingdom of Jerusalem. That's the Templar-managed kingdom of the Crusades, which was lost in 1291 under the battles of Saladin, who kicked them out. Crowley says also something that within the Babylon working in the sex magic is that there's something about human sacrifice, that in his Book of the Law in 1904, he even gives advice on how to find the best sacrifice. And he says, "The best blood is of the moon, then the flesh, fresh blood of a child, or a dropping from the host of heaven, then of enemies, and then of the priest or the worshippers. Last, some beast, no matter what." So these are the different degrees of pleasure that the demons, that the dark deities receive out of the kinds of sacrifice one can make, which has to coincide in some weird way with sex. So let's now take a quick little peek at some of his influence on specifically World Wars I and II. Featured there on the upper left is Sir J.C.R. Fuller, who is a co-founder of the Argentum Astrum Lodge, one of the leading generals, a major general in England, an innovator of tank warfare, and unfortunately, even to this very day, his theories on tank warfare are still taught in military academies around the world. There's a strange phone going off here, which I must deal with. Thank you. Oh, that's actually an alarm bell. I'm in somebody else's house, so that was a front door alarm. Now, he was also the lieutenant to Sir Oswald Mosley, who's featured in the center and who is known as the head of the British Union of Fascists, the British Nazi. He was himself also a theosophist. And Fuller is known to have been the back channel that Crowley deployed to engage both with the high echelon elite of the black magicians and fascists in England, but also of Germany. So that's a bunch of British assholes doing the Sig Heil. And Fuller had a direct connection to the new Templars in Germany around Himmler and company, who interfaced with Hitler. Secret Agent 666, for those who want to do a bit of their own research on this, I highly recommend picking this book up. It's very affordable on Amazon by Richard B. Spence, going through Aleister Crowley, British Intelligence and the Occult. That's him with the looking over the sinking of the Lusitania. This book actually demonstrates how he played a key role in orchestrating the 1915 sinking of the Lusitania, as well as organizing a mass black magic network inside of America that had penetrations in Washington, deep penetrations, as well as into various cult sects and even Hollywood, where Crowley was the advisor and writer of several of the earliest Hollywood movies in 1917-18, which this is even before Hollywood. The area was then New York before it branched out into Hollywood, which is where Crowley's movies can be seen. This is also a big part of my book, Revenge of the Mystery Cults, Volumes 2 and 3. Richard Spence writes, "Crowley's influence reached the top of the German clandestine and diplomatic hierarchies in the U.S., through his connection to the Fatherland, which is the name of a pro-German magazine, and the likes of Viereck, John Sylvester Viereck, who I'll say something about shortly. Crowley rubbed elbows with Dr. Albert von Papen and even Ambassador of Germany, Bernstorff. Thus, he became more than a mere propagandist. The Germans came to place great faith in the beast's intuition and saw him as an indispensable guide into the mentality of the Americans and the British. He especially impressed them with his ability to predict the actions and reactions of the British. It was almost as though he could see into the inner sanctums of Whitehall," which is British intelligence. the possibility that he was a British double agent plying them with disinformation apparently eluded them. And as Spence proves, he was indeed brought into British intelligence in the 1890s under Glascoigne Cecil, and remained so, it seems, throughout his entire life, because even in World War II, you'll find the exact same operations that he had organized before and during World War I to be still active, including this figure of George Sylvester Viereck, who is a key Nazi American poet, a supporter and a promoter of Teddy Roosevelt, of eugenics, and also the official Nazi spokesman of America, who organized all of the Madison Square Garden Nazi rallies of the 1930s, was George Sylvester Viereck. He was also put in jail because of his role in organizing American congressmen and senators to promote Nazism, as well as to promote America's non-involvement in World War II, which was disruptive to the New World Order agenda of the time. And he went to jail up until 1940 until 47 or so. His son actually is a leading co-founder of the neoconservative movement, if you can believe that. Now, Viereck and Crowley were working with British German intelligence as well on a number of points. This is an excerpt from a U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence investigation, which has been declassified. People could read the full thing online, the scanned documents, from 1918, where U.S. Naval Intelligence was trying to track down where are these fifth columnists in America that's trying to get the U.S. to get sucked into World War I. The U.S. was not supposed to be in World War I. World War I was an insane war. It was never supposed to happen, but that's why Crowley ensured that the Germans had access to intelligence that informed them that the Lusitania was also carrying weapons and munitions, breaking the neutrality pact as well as civilians, and thus destroyed that that Lusitania with a strike by U-boats, resulting in a kind of Pearl Harbor-like psychological attack, a 9/11 type of moment in the minds of the population, who began to all of a sudden support revenge of the evil Germans. So the U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence, then under the influence of Franklin Roosevelt, the Secretary of the Navy, tracked down the satanic network. And in one of their documents, they write, "Aleister Crowley, English subject, previous correspondence, subject has been camping on Esopus Island, Hudson River, and was brought to attention by this office by the subject's connections with Madeline George, an actress of New York City who had formerly been investigated by the Department of Justice on charges of being a German spy. It was determined that Aleister Crowley was an employee of the British government, but at present in this country on official business, of which the British Council in New York City has full cognizance. However, he has been formally investigated by the Attorney General Becker's office in connection with the activities of George Viereck and the propaganda in New York City. It was found that the British government was full aware of the fact that Crowley was connected with this German propaganda and had received money for writing anti-British articles. This case has been turned over to the New York State Attorney General's office for such actions as may be deemed advisable." Within that same report, the U.S. Office of Naval Intelligence hypothesizes that the way that these communications were sent from New York to Germany, to Berlin, regarding the Lusitania, but much else, was through these new towers that had been bankrolled by certain oligarchs affiliated with the new British-run American intelligence service that had emerged out of the Sleepy Hollow Country Club of Stephen Rockefeller, that involved membership of all of the leading strata of the U.S. elite, the Morgans, the Vanderbilts, the DuPonts, everybody who was part of that upper echelon clique were all sponsors and members of the Sleepy Hollow Club, which is also what generated two branches of U.S. military intelligence, including what became the NSA under the guidance of Sir Claude Dancy, somebody who was there in America at the same time as Crowley, and who was the overseer and creator of the Black Chamber that became the NSA out of the Sleepy Hollow Club. And they speculate that it was through a tower that had been created by Nikola Tesla in Long Island, which is also the same tower that might have had a, and it seems they were speculating, had a sister tower to receive signals across the ocean using the ionosphere to bounce messages across, and which would have been received in the minds of American intelligence then as being run by the guru of Hitler's leading general, whose name is all of a sudden escaping me, but this general who made all of the decisions that got Germany sucked into this unnecessary war, and every single trap was, actually, I have him right here. It's Helmut von Moltke. And this German chief of staff, his personal mentor and guru was Rudolf Steiner. Rudolf Steiner had been also an initiate, as he describes in his autobiography, of the Memphis Mizraim cult, as well as the OTO, as well as Theosophy, which he led the German branch of for many, many years. And the naval intelligence officers believe that it was Steiner who was overseeing this transmission of information and setting up Germany through Moltke's influence to fall into these traps. So, and that's a picture of the Tesla Tower being dismantled by U.S. naval intelligence when it was discovered to be under enemy hands. So there's been a whole story. And in fact, the mythology of Tesla's plan to save the world using his great discoveries and this Tesla Tower being something that he sent different parts of the blueprint to different parts of the world to get the world to talk with each other and have world peace. That story actually finds its origins in the writings in 1931, 32 of George Sylvester V. Rake, who happens to be Nikola Tesla's lifelong best friend, who even lived together for a certain period in five-star hotels, which is where Tesla pretty much lived his entire life, in five-star hotels in New York, overlapping with this clique. So, you know, there's more to that story. And for people who do want to know that story, I'd suggest picking up my Revenge of the Mystery Cults, Volume 2, Rosicrucian Golem, that features a big picture of Tesla on the cover. Some other Crowley heirs that are noteworthy, I already mentioned, but I'll say it again, Jack Parsons and L. Ron Hubbard, who both rose to prominence in managing Crowley's Ordo Templi Orientis Agape Lodge in California, Agape Lodge number 2. Both believed their mission in life to be the ushering in of the Antichrist, and both were known to have carried out Babylon working rituals in the deserts of New Mexico with Mariana Faithful, a woman who also would later on star in several Kenneth Anger horror movies, experimental horror movies in the 1960s, alongside Mick Jagger, who wrote music for these things, and several members of Charles Manson's family. Charles Manson himself having received over 180 hours of Scientology auditing while he was under investigation, or not investigation, he's being handled by certain figures tied to U.S. military intelligence, who also seem to have guided him in the creation of his synthetic satanic cult. And Crowley and Hubbard worked very closely with Parsons in carrying out this idea of ushering this new age. And both of them had an extreme amount of influence in creating institutions that would have a lot of play in the next coming decades, including our own. Parsons, by the way, was under also investigation. I forget which branch of U.S. intelligence was investigating him, who were looking at causes of leaks of Manhattan Project classified information to the new Zionist power that had only recently been created. And Parsons was presumed to have been the catalyzer of Caltech classified information on rocketry and nuclear science into the hands of Israeli military intelligence. Carnap, who was one of his protectors, also seems to have been involved in that. These were guys tied to the Oppenheimer networks in America. His death might be over promoted. It seems like Parson, who is, people say he died when he was like 39 doing an experiment on explosives in his garage. Seems like that is a bit of a lie as well. It doesn't seem like he died. He might have given up his name as part of the Rosicrucian initiation ritual that all high level members are expected to go through if they're going to rise to a higher level, is you have to kind of like fake your death, take on a new name so that you're purged of doing things for ego. Of course, at the end of the day, I think they're still trying to please those who are in their inner club that they admire at the end of the day. So they're not actually escaping ego in my mind. And L. Ron Hubbard, of course, had his own story. where he created something known as Scientology using a emblem that he modified from the Golden Dawn official cross. Other symbols used by Scientology also very much reflect innovations that had been established by the alchemists and Kabbalists around the Golden Dawn earlier. And it's known that his OT, operating Thetan initiatory degree system, which I think has something like 8, but maybe 9th. I know he innovated an 8th degree, but there might be more. That system, I've been told, is a play on the Ordo Templi Orientis, but he just calls it, you know, operating Thetan, infusing a lot of the same demonology, the same occult ritual, but under a new sci-fi kind of garb, a new space opera kind of language, but with the same effects. And even his own son, L. Ron Hubbard's own son, had stated in an interview in Penthouse magazine in 1982, I believe, that the only belief practiced in the household, theory and practice, was black magic and Satanism. His son even said that he believed that his father believed himself to be the Antichrist, to be Satan, sorry, not the Antichrist, to be Satan, which is, I guess, how he presumed that he gave birth to the Antichrist, is because he was Satan somehow. So when he impregnated somebody, he could say, oh, I've given birth to the Antichrist. I guess that was how he was thinking about it. And also made the point, too, that Scientology is merely black magic spread out over a lifetime, whereas typical black magic occurs within hours or days at most. This is more, and so he says you don't see it as much because it's so spread out and thus more subtle. Crowley also didn't, he also touched the very idea of aliens that is so present in the disclosure psyop that we're currently living through, and the whole blueprint of the Greys, the image of them, followed the guideline of Crowley's design in 1918 of a being that he called Lamb, who appeared to him through the Amal Hantra working in New York City, near Long Island, where he was also simultaneously transmitting information, it seems, to German intelligence. So that gray alien concept that was then added to and modified really follows the guideline of none other than Crowley. Interesting point. Trying to switch my slides here, and it's all of a sudden seizing up on me. I'm sure I'll... Oh, there we go. All right, let's look at some of Crowley's satanic errors number 2. So on this slide, we have the figure of Colonel Michael Aquino in 3 slides. 1, while he's still a member of Anton LaVey's Church of Satan, featuring Sammy Davis Jr. there in the middle. There's one when he's in military garb. He is himself one of the top controllers of Operation Phoenix, a member of the Green Berets, U.S. Special Forces, which he joins in the 60s. It seems like he's also the Zodiac Killer, or at least he's one of the Zodiac Killers in the 60s. In Operation Phoenix in Vietnam, under Edward Lansdale, he oversees the mass murder of over 40,000, mostly civilians, which is just the most atrocious satanic bloodletting that I've ever seen in that form, and that he then works to apply to Latin America using the creation and the organization of the death and torture squads that would be applied in right-wing governments that would be installed over the dead bodies of nationalist leaders in Operation Condor that the U.S. Green Berets then set up in the 1970s and onward to oversee a sort of phoenixing destruction of the former identities of the nations and the peoples of Latin America and the creation of something more controllable. So that's Crowley, that's Aquino there. His eyebrows, by the way, that have this coiffed look to them, he got from an inspired image he had seen of Crowley with similar eyebrows earlier, and that's how he modeled his own eyebrows. Kind of weird. And there's a picture of him with Lilith, his wife, the high priestess of his Temple of Set, that he created in 1975 as a splinter group, a breakaway from the Temple of Satan, its own variations. And he himself saw his identity as the avatar of Aleister Crowley to accelerate Crowley's new age. He called it the Age of Set, the uncle of Horus, who had killed Osiris in the famous story where Horus dies, his body is reassembled by Isis, except his penis, which she can't find. And so you have phallic worship come out of that story. But it's basically the same thing, as far as I could see. And he's also the initiator of the revolution in military affairs under General Stubblebeam, the head of Army intelligence in the 1980s, and who oversees the reformation of the training of special forces and many different branches of the military, Navy SEALs as well. And under that period of 1980 to the 19, throughout the 1980s, really. The manual used is called PSYOP to Mind War, is one of the dominant guidelines that Colonel Vallely and Michael Aquino co-write together at this time. The headquarter of this is the 7th Psychological Operations Group, the 7th PSYOP Group at the United States Army Reserves in Presidio, San Francisco, 1980. The Presidio scandal also coincides with this period where Aquino, who's one of the highest level, he has highest level security clearance. So he has protectors very high up in the deep state who's ensuring that he has maximum protection. He also is the guy who oversees the infusion of Satanism into the U.S. military and grants it the status of being an official religion. That very same Aquino is caught overseeing a massive pedophile ring using daycares on the bases of Presidio, where hundreds and hundreds of children suffered under this creep and his wife Lilith. People could just Google Presidio pedophile scandal Aquino, and you'll find a lot of material that's been pulled together there. From within the Mind War manual, it says psychotronic research is in its infancy, but the U.S. Army already possesses an operational weapon system designed to do what Colonel John Alexander, another Operation Phoenix Special Operations Green Beret who worked with Aquino, would like ESP to do, except that this weapon system uses existing communications media. By the way, Alexander is still alive and still very active in the UFO disclosure movement. He worked very closely with Jacques Vallée and many others in advancing, and Lawrence Rockefeller being a key figure, this idea of a new age that would reset all of the religions around a new set of narratives of perceived aliens slash demons from other dimensions or whatever, that would then give people a new, either break their faith in their religions or revamp their religions to accommodate the idea that Jesus and Muhammad and others were aliens. Drugs goes with this. It seeks to map the minds of neutral and enemy individuals and then to change them in accordance with U.S. national interests. It does this on a wide scale, embracing military units, regions, nations, and blocks. In its present form, it is called Psychological Operations PSYOP. So changing the minds of populations, neutral and enemy alike. I believe that this is intentionally directed as well against the American population, not just enemy nations, and involves a whole array of psychotronic technologies, electromagnetic, as well as psychic things that were being developed by these figures operating out of, anyway, we'll say more about that later. Some of the other heirs include none other than Joe Rogan, who is a very close friend, who is very close friends with Stanton LaVey, the grandson of Anton LaVey and a leader within the Church of Satan. There's Rogan there some years ago with the 666 shirt doing the little Hail Satan thing with Stanton LaVey. There's the Baphomet once again as a modern sculpture that I believe is being unveiled at the Arkansas State Legislature in America a few years back, featuring two children looking up at this Baphomet androgynous deity. I would say in my research, it's looking more and more that, Paul Vallely is still kicking. That's him there with Charlie Kirk. To what degree Charlie Kirk was aware of this, I don't know. All I know is he was the co-founder of Turning Point USA and a leading advisor of Turning Point USA, which is designed to change the minds of Americans. Co-author of Mind Wars, as I mentioned, with Aquino. And he's was a member, I don't know if he still is, but he was a member of the Jerusalem Summit organization devoted to relocate and resettle Palestinians and Palestine people to surrounding Arab countries as a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and to bring about the organization's belief that, quote, one of the objectives of Israel's divinely inspired rebirth is to make it the center of the new unity of the nations, which will lead to an era of peace and prosperity foretold by the prophets. Okay. And there, I included Hegseth, not just because of his disturbing Templar Kingdom of Jerusalem sepulcher tattoo, but also because, you know, he gave that famous speech that I've played a number of times on Breaking History in 2017 in Jerusalem, celebrating the importance of rebuilding Solomon's temple as the purpose of his life's mission. Oh, my screen is stuck again. Here, I'll get it. So, and also American Crusade. He also points out in his 2020 book that our present moment is much like the 11th century. We don't want to fight, but like our fellow Christians 1,000 years ago, we must fight. Again, this millennialist idea of these purgative moments that break humanity in 1,000-year cycles, which each has some necessary massive cataclysmic event, is something I could see floating over these words, where he calls about the organization, the renewal of America's identity into a more manly, masculine identity, you know, akin to what the Templars exhibited, the Crusaders exhibited. And his idea would be we need a new crusade against, in his book, Islam and China, pretty much. China and Islam are the two big enemies that will reorganize America's identity and give us a new national fiber. Finally, total information awareness featured the Eye of Horus. It was a short-lived initiative by the neocons in 2003, overseen by John Poindexter and Richard Perle. The Eye of Horus, looking down on the world, is the idea that in the post 9/11 age battle against terrorism, that we should all give up our freedom in order to secure liberties from this eye, of this all-seeing eye that would look upon us. People didn't buy it. They rejected it. It didn't have the support needed out of DARPA. And so it was canceled and given a new name called Palantir, which was set up in 2004, basically as a civilian front group. Now, the people who, and I write about this in Rosicrucian Golem Volume 2 under my Peter Thiel section, is that the overseers of Palantir's creation were in Qtel, and Thiel himself was part of the PayPal mafia, was, and also a Stanford click figure who had risen to prominence in Stanford at the Libertarian Review that he was the editor-in-chief of, where he became a close student, or he became advised by the former head of Opus Dei of California. I forgot his name, of a young initiative, Jose Maria Escriva, the founder of Opus Dei, who lived and trained as an old man, Thiel, as well as Richard Perle, who bankrolled the growth of Thiel's magazine in the 1980s and early 90s. InQtel was the CIA venture capitalist organization, which oversaw the creation there of many things that had a civilian front image. And John Poindexter and Richard Perle directly interfaced with Thiel as Palantir was being set up in 2004 to basically do everything that the total information awareness was going to do. And instead of using the all-seeing eye of Horus, it had a different all-seeing eye that was made popular in Lord of the Rings. The orb of Palantir was the orb of omniscience that anybody holding it could see anything that they so willed. And on the bottom right is a picture of that guy creepily looking at you named Louis Mosley. Louis Mosley is the CEO of Palantir UK, and he's the grandson of Sir Oswald Mosley. Of all the people in the world, it's Oswald Mosley's grandson who's running Palantir UK. Really? I didn't mention, too, that Turning Point UK is also founded by Candace Owens' husband, Lord, forgot his name all of a sudden, Lord George something. Anyway, a lot of shady points of connection there that are disturbing. All right, let's just move. We're almost at the end right now. So what is Mystery Babylon? I contend in my research that it has a lot to do with the thing that Darby called for, which was the resettlement of Jews around the world, the diaspora, into Palestine, to create a new state. That Darby is on record calling for this. He's the cousin also of Lord Shaftesbury, who's tied also to, he's the cousin of Lord Palmerston, who are all openly calling for creating a state for specific, an ethno-national state for the Jews. Wingate, Ord Wingate, who's the co-founder of the Haganah party, the Haganah group, the Irgun grouping in Israel, is also obsessed with this idea of establishing a greater Israel. So is Theodor Herzl, who's an admirer of Cecil Rhodes, who's looking at an idea of creating a new world from the river to the Euphrates that would be the culmination of the covenant of God to Moses thousands of years earlier. And the It's not exactly the same, but honestly, it's not that different. When you look at the borders of the Neo-Babylonian Empire that was in existence when the Jews were in captivity for 48 years and the aspirations of those who wish to see a greater Israel today, it's kind of the same thing. So just to say, and who is the Antichrist? Well, there's a lot of contenders. And I'm not saying it's any one or another, but what I am saying is that there's some clues just to keep that in the back of your mind, one of which being Roman Polanski, the pedophile I mentioned, who seems to be a Satanist and director who escaped arrest in America when he was found guilty of pedophilia and escaped to France, where he lives to this very day, making movies like The Ninth Gate with Johnny Depp, another Satanist. All of his movies are very, very indicative of the cosmology and the dark beliefs of these creeps, and unveiling Rosemary is now accepting of her new role as the mother, the mother of the Antichrist in his disgusting 1979 film, holding a bunch of roses. So too did those controlling the costume of Kate Middleton choose to basically decorate her as a Scarlet Woman. It's disturbing, but that is not an accident. When she unveils her, I don't know if it's her second or third baby, it's a boy, to the world in 2018, I think. Strange choice of costume. So I think that we've reached possibly the end. Oh yeah, just a few other images of various members of the occult intelligence networks that Crowley interfaced with. This is specifically members of the Memphis Mizraim sect, and that's pretty much it. So let's just see, what time is it? It's 7:23. That went on for a while, but I'm glad that I did that simply because I wanted that, essentially presented in one location where people could then maybe go back to, revisit, extract more research out of. There's a lot of leads I'm presenting. I didn't present the full case. Clearly, there's much more to the story. And also, hopefully, I've whetted your palates that you'll want to do a bit more heavy lifting, and maybe my Revenge of the Mystery Cult series would be something that you could find as a useful challenge to pick up and work on over the coming months going forward. Revenge of the Mystery Cults Volume 1 is known as Mystery Babylon in the Age of Aquarius. Volume 2 is on Rosicrucian Golem. And number 3 is Edgar Allan Poe's Final Mystery, A Tale of Two Murders, which will go into the Jack the Ripper story, as well as what Edgar Allan Poe is doing to battle against this black magic Rosicrucian takeover of U.S. patriotic lodges in the 19th century. So that's it. That's something that's out there. We also made a documentary on Edgar Allan Poe and that part of the story that's available on CanadianPatriot.org, as well as RisingTideFoundation.net. You'll find that everywhere. And finally, the ability to order the books, similar, go to CanadianPatriot.org, look for Buy the Books, you'll see them there, both as PDF, Kindle, and paperback. If people want a signed copy, I've got a few, write me through my website, CanadianPatriot.org or RisingTideFoundation.net, and we can arrange to sell some signed copies if you'd like. So there's that. So let me now scan through very quickly. I can go on a little bit more, I think, than I don't think I have to stop at 7:30 necessarily exactly. But I'm going to just scan through a little bit. There's a lot of positive remarks. I appreciate that. I'm glad people generally liked this material. Again, it's pretty heavy stuff, and I do apologize for the weightiness, but you know, the times call for it. Somebody just wrote George Farmer. Correct. George Farmer was the name I was looking for. I'm just scanning right now, and I bit off more than I could chew by promising that I could go through this. Matt, what do you think about Tulsi wrapping InQtel back under the DNI, exposing it for what it is? I hope so. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I really do need an assistant for these sorts of things. Somebody, Obama writes again, Matt, you were so right. They're coming in so hot and heavy with this shit show now. And it's only because of you that I know to see through it. Hey, that's a great comment. Thank you. See, I'm not actually reading these things before I just show them. The big one here I'm really going to emphasize that we made a number of documentaries freely available on the hidden hand behind UFOs. I think that people need to really prepare their minds for that one. And I'll probably infuse that into a couple of episodes of Breaking Free of PSYOPs in the weeks and months ahead, because they're already accelerating the UFO aspect, the big disclosure thing, very, very fast. And it's going to get crazy, especially as things like blue beam technology are rolled out to add coloring to the people's experience of what they think they're seeing in the sky. That's something just to hold on to. And we've already been sort of conditioned quite a bit through many, many years of Hollywood films, of things that have been sort of programming our subconscious through the field of what we thought was entertainment, but it's actually preparing our minds to accept uncritically certain revelations that we should be much more critical about. And that also includes the AI story, that because these are all sort of convergent aspects that have all been brought together. The AI demonology, ufology aspects of the magic trick are all kind of being, nudged together to be one thing, different sides of one thing. So got to just keep that stuff heavily in mind. And again, the Hidden Hand Behind UFOs, episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4 are all available also on CanadianPatriot.org for those who want to dig into that. And we're going to be making 5, 6, and 7, God willing, in the period ahead, in the months ahead, which we'll go into ever more detail, which you'll see. And you got to watch those and share them. It is 7:21. Here, let me see here. Somebody writes, I heard the Pleiadians destroyed the deep state blue beam satellites. Well, Lanny Lou, I'm sorry to tell you, but you've been psyoped. Don't know how else to say it, but we're going to be going into, I haven't written the full script of this yet, but when I do get into the episode 5 of The Hidden Hand Behind UFOs, it will be on the issue of UFO cults from the 19th century theosophists, the followers of Annie Besant, Bailey, Charles Leadbeater, through Aleister Crowley and the followers of H.G. Wells, but specifically this whole theosophical grouping that were obsessed with creating the New Age, that also generated all of the theories that are prevalent in our current society of the Palladians and other things like that. The nine as well, who are channeled, always channeled, right? Are channeled through special priestesses and oracles to give wisdom to the masses, yada, yada, yada. It's the same thing it's the same technique, the same recipe book that's been used many, many times over throughout the aeons and the ages. So yeah, you can actually dig into the originators of a lot of these things and find the exact same network that I just brought up in this very short presentation, unfortunately. Yeah. And again, that episode 5 will be coming out. Laura says, want to add Holocaust hoax to your list, but that beyond the pale? No, it's a whole conversation unto itself. Certainly, we could go there, but I don't want to get Badlands necessarily canceled. So we're not going to necessarily go there at the time being. That being said, usually when I hear this come up, it's usually from people who have been psyoped into believing that the Nazis were the good guys of World War II, and we've been lied to by Jew bankers, and that is also a giant lie. Hitler was absolutely a black magician, along with the Crowleyites, who brought in Thelema into the operating system of the Nazi high command. There was hardcore black magic, and I'm actually making a documentary, which is in mid-production right now, called the, it's gone through a few different names, but it's the Black Sun Rising, Esoteric Nazism, Past and Present, because it is also being revived currently. Now, just because the official narratives of World War II are bunk doesn't mean that Hitler was the good guy. He was evil for different reasons than people think. Is Valiant Thor real? Didn't he meet Eisenhower? No, that's a hoax cooked up from the same followers of, what's his name? Pele, George, the leader of the U.S. Silver Shirt Theosophists fascist party that worked with the Reich in the 30s and then became a UFO cult leader in the late 40s. We could actually have to really brush up on my notes and do a whole show on just the UFO cults. I think that'll actually be a useful way to even help organize the script, frankly, is to just do a presentation just on the UFO cults. And we can go through some of these personalities that generated the imagery of the Venusian, you know, Aryan, blonde, blue-eyed, perfect people as counterparts to the dark gray alien types of the Lam model. So a lot of this stuff, again, came out of the late 40s, early 50s. Episode 4 of The Hidden Hand Behind UFOs, we'll go through a lot of that. And the Majestic 12 documents, I also debunk thoroughly in The Hidden Hand Episode 4 on the myth of Roswell, the creation of a new legend. So the Majestic 12 documents that go through the story or originate the story of Eisenhower and Truman interfacing, creating secret treaties between the U.S. government and Palladians and other alien beings of the Galactic Confederation. Those things were all completely hoaxes in the 1980s. And again, that documentary goes through that. Go to CanadianPatriot.org for that one. Somebody writes here, I grew up learning the Jerusalem cross was about the wounds of Christ and the four gospels. When did it become something wicked? Was I tricked? Now, as far as I can tell, a lot of these symbols always have multiple meanings depending on where you're coming from and what degree of initiation you're in. So, you know, without going into detail, I'm not too sure necessarily. I think the symbol emerged from the Holy Sepulchre, which the image given of the knighthood begun in 1899 or 1898. To take control over and manage the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is reputed to have been built over the area where Jesus was killed on the cross, and even features apparently shards, holy relics, including shards of the true cross. I think that honestly, when I look into the story of the relics in the centuries after Jesus was killed, most of the relics are giant hoaxes. So people would do the most insane things for these mystical, you know, like here's a booger. It was from the nose of Jesus and it has magical powers and go to war with this grouping over here, kill that town of Jews in order to, you know, earn this booger. And people would fight over these things and different Christian factions would group themselves to go and fight and kill to get different relics. The toenail of Jesus here, St. Peter wore this scarf. And so that I think most of these relics and probably the wood of the cross, I hypothesize is probably not, it's probably all made up, I would say. All right. So what else you got here? MC Modern says the Thule Society too. Yeah, that's going to play a big role in the upcoming film, The Empire, Black Sun Rising. The Thule Society, for those who don't know, is the inner black magic section of the SS that Hitler's mentor Dietrich Eckart was a leader of, and Dietrich Eckart professed openly to have given Hitler the secret doctrine. That is a reference to Madame Blavatsky's secret doctrine of 1888. A way to communicate with the higher intelligences, the ascended masters of Blavatsky. These ascended masters, by the way, are always modified as the script demands to have different coloring, whether it's from, again, the Sirius ascended masters living in the rings of Saturn or in Palladian or whatever, on Venus, on Mars. George Adamski is another theosophist, the former head of the Order of Tibet, the Order of Tibet in California, who's a theosophical leader and all of a sudden, and a fascist, and then all of a sudden becomes an alien cult leader in the 60s, late 40s. Same thing for Hubbard as well, frankly, you know, so keep that in mind. Right now, people think of Hubbard's alien demon religion as being kind of kooky on the fringe, but if people start believing that, hey, aliens are here, governments are all admitting it, and now we've got Bluebeam showing us maybe Hubbard was actually a prophet. Maybe his fringe religion is actually going to become or should become a more mainstream religion. Maybe that should replace the old obsolete idea of Christianity that didn't accept aliens. You know, so you got to keep in mind that that's a sort of recipe book. You can see it doesn't take too many steps of the imagination to see that kind of shit. Sorry for the language for kids out there, but kids shouldn't necessarily be taking this in this format, at least. Boy, there's a lot of questions. Jeez, I should have ended earlier. GD says Matt speaks American really well. Thank you, I guess. I don't know. Okay. All right. Boy. Oh, yeah. Bama also says, and this is important, Cynthia's work. Yes. Cynthia should be, her work on The Empire on Which the Black Sun Never Set is a phenomenal book. Original research. She's working on volume 2 as we speak, but check out The Empire on Which the Black Sun Never Set, also available on CanadianPatriot.org. And you'll find a lot of very useful material in there. So yeah. Okay. So it's 7:38. I've gone over 8 minutes beyond what I should have done. I know Gordon's probably giving his show right now. So wasn't everybody go over to Gordon's show, and I will see you all next week for another episode of, no, this is not Movie Nights. This is Breaking Free of PsyOps. All right. Good night.